Friday, March 14th, feels like baseball season. There's a blizzard outside of my apartment.
No, there's not.
Not here. Not where you are, but up here, we've got like a nor'easter or something like that. It's blizzarding. Makes me want a Dairy Queen blizzard. So, welcome.
It's 70 degrees here.
Yeah, shut up, Chris. Good morning, and we are talking a lot today. In case you missed the position previews, this is our position preview recap. We'll go through every position one by one, give a quick little thought on our strategy, player we like to draft, that kind of thing. It's a very helpful show. I wanted to do a mock draft tomorrow on the air, but I don't think we're ready for it. I think I've been a bad producer slash host. There are too many players that we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about prospects. We got a lot more to get to before we do a live mock draft on the air, which I think we'll do next week. So,
hey, Adam.
Yeah?
We already did a live mock draft on the air.
Yeah, I don't know if you were here.
We're going to do another one. Well, we're only allowed to do one.
If we're not, you said we're not ready for it. We already did one.
It was all of us. We had a really good time.
Yeah, okay, fine. But we're not ready for the next one.
Okay.
There's a lot I want to cover. I think people are going to start drafting. You know, they already drafted, I think, last weekend, some this weekend, and then it'll really pick up. But you know what? It's sleeper week and breakout week. So if you have any suggestions, please email us, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And let's get to a few listener sleepers and breakouts. James in Kentucky says, hey, David, Sydney, Lenny, and Carrie.
Yes.
Who's that?
It's my favorite show.
What is it?
Show is so good. Legion on FX. It is nuts.
Oh, actually, yeah. James said those are characters from the new show, yeah. Legion, which should be your newest sponsor, Adam. It's weird.
It is so good. It is like super creepy.
Really?
It's like an X-Men adjacent show. I cannot recommend it enough, even though I don't understand what's happening in this show.
Oh,
X-Men right. Adjacent? Is that what you said?
Legion is an X-Men character.
Oh.
But it's not like an X-Men show.
So it's kind of a spinoff.
Sounds kind of nerdy.
It's not. It's so creepy. It's like legitimately creepy.
So it's
really good.
Is it comic booky?
No, it's like a psychological. Like his character has like schizophrenia, but he's like a mutant, so his schizophrenia goes out into the world. It's crazy.
It was a frontier that had not been discussed yet. Let's talk about the emotional needs of superheroes.
Okay. Oh, it's so good, guys.
All right. So this is the question
I don't understand
from James. I've been seeing Hunter Pence going well into the 200s in mock drafts, and I've been taking Pence as a fifth outfielder to pair with late upside guys like Mitch Haniger, Manuel Margot. Are the injury concerns really enough to drive down the value of a hitter of Hunter Pence's caliber this much, or are people sleeping on Pence?
I think the answer to both may be yes, because this is something I've noticed a lot, too, and I actually had to move him down like 15 spots in my outfield rankings to compensate for him, because, yeah, you get into that 19, 20, 21 round range, and a lot of times Pence is still there, and it's not like he's gotten significantly worse. It's just he's gotten to where he's not this like steady, you can count on him to play every day, healthy guy. So, you know, obviously I was passing him up until that point in drafts too. So the answer to the first question is yes, but then it does get to a point where the answer to the second question is also yes, because if he is able to stay healthy, he's probably somebody you never take out of your lineup.
I'm still far more likely to draft him in a points league, and the problem is that the points leagues are only three outfielders, and the roto leagues are five, and he's kind of, to me, like a rich man's Joe Panic in the outfield. I feel pretty confident that I know what he's going to do, and he's going to be solid, if not spectacular, but I don't know what category he's really going to help me out a lot in besides batting average.
He's not going to steal anymore.
I would not expect him to steal anymore. I don't really expect him to hit more than 20 home runs.
Yeah.
He has suffered a little bit, too, from the landscape change, if you believe in that.
Right. Because
he hasn't gotten worse, but the league around him has gotten better.
One thing I will say is, like, currently he's going in around the 180 range, according to Fantasy Pros. Matt Holliday's going 60 spots later. I'm not sure Hunter Pence isn't exactly the same guy as Matt Holliday.
I think I'd rather have Holliday.
I think I would too, just because I like the situation he's in a little better.
Well,
I'd rather have Pence than Holliday for sure in a points league.
Scott, Pence or Holliday?
Pence.
All right. Greg, formerly in Houston, what are your thoughts on Jurickson Profar as a post-hype sleeper this year?
Where is Greg now?
Maybe his last name is Formerly. And
Greg Formerly.
Because he did capitalize it. He's Greg Formerly, and he's from Houston.
Okay.
That's probably not the case, but we'll go with that.
I think Profar is a good post-type sleeper. They want him to play semi-regularly in the outfield, I believe, and if he hits really well in April, he could just play regularly instead of semi-regularly.
You're totally banking on just pedigree and upside there, though, because he was awful last year in his most extended look in the majors. His ISO was like the worst in baseball. Maybe not literally, but very close.
Well, yeah, he did not top 100 ISO. I guess there are extenuating circumstances because of how much time he's missed. You know, he had barely played the previous couple of seasons, so I'm not excited about him, though.
Like, what's the playing time for Profar?
You know, it could wind up being every day in left field, yeah. Or he could prove he's not deserving of that. It's very much up in the air. I think we're definitely talking an AL-only scenario here.
Okay. Time for the Twitter poll. This is based on an argument that Chris and I were having on Twitter. That's where Chris likes to settle his beefs.
That's where I live. You're in my turf now.
Is the Breakfast Club good? And I can actually look up the updated standings, but we had a nice amount of votes. I think about 1,500 or so. And yes is killing it, 75% or 73% to 27%, something like that. I'll see updated.
Of course, it's good.
It's a terrible movie.
You're a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Well, I would come in the middle here because I'm generally, you know, even tempered Heath. I would say that it can be good and still be overrated. People treat it like it's a classic.
It's a classic.
I'm not sure it's a classic, but it's definitely good.
Mm, no, I mean, it's one of the best movies from the 80s.
No.
It's not in the top 10.
Oh, it definitely is.
It's probably not even
a
top 10.
But I think it's still one of the best movies of the 80s.
I think the 80s are generally a little overrated when it comes to movies.
That was kind of the point I was making. Like, it's
not true at all.
Yeah. You know, I pretty much 90s and later. I guess that's the era I grew up.
Right.
That's,
just
that's,
because
so those are the movies that
you were a baby
with
in the
me
80s.
The best, but. Of the 80s movies, I mean, Breakfast
it's
Club is memorable.
It's a little too long.
Terrible. It's so bad.
The emotions are oversaturated, but as I was telling you, that's what 80s culture was all about, just dripping with emotion.
Okay, but it doesn't hold up. It's a bad movie. Like, it was fine then.
It,
you go back and
it
watch
definitely
it.
Holds up.
It definitely
You're
holds
ridiculous.
Up. Yep.
All right,
much
so,
better than Ghostbusters.
Here's an email of the day from Adam and St. Pete. You know, we had a couple of emails about sleepers and breakouts. It's not better than Ghostbusters. That's ridiculous.
No.
Adam and St. Pete says, Dear Dong, Ding Dong, and apparently Johnson. Yes.
I believe one of those was the clown in Inside Out.
What? Dong? Where's my automobile? Tell me what I'm missing with Daniel Murphy. A career middle infield option who goes nuts in the postseason, then has 1 year of all-star production at age 31, and you guys have Daniel Murphy as a top 25 player? In a year where power was up across the board, he hit all of 25 home runs, he doesn't steal bases, he had a .348 BABIP, he hasn't played more than 142 games since 2013, his name is Daniel, and he doesn't go by Dan or Danny. What is there to like about Daniel Murphy?
I actually think he's being underdrafted at 31 overall. I think he should be going higher than that. Okay, only 25 home runs. He had a ton of doubles. It wasn't just a good postseason. This started in August of the previous season. He made conscious efforts. He made a conscious decision to adjust his swing plane and put the ball in the air more. And that He reaped the benefits of it last season. He hit the ball harder than he ever has. He maintained
the previous postseason and August, like you're saying. It's not just a 1 year thing.
And he maintained his elite control of the strike zone. So he's one of the guys that I think you put on the short list of. I think you put him right there with Jose Altuve as the guys most likely to win a batting title.
I really kind of want to agree with his email. Like, he has made me want to lower Daniel Murphy just a little bit.
What Murphy? Okay, so I think
it sounds like a very Heath argument. Like, you've got a guy that's a career 290 hitter that is .347 once, and all of a sudden he's with Jose Altuve as the most likely guys to win a batting title.
Mm-hmm. But
well, I mean, he doesn't have to hit 347 again. The BABIP was high, but he hit 347. Like, if he hits 320, what does the BABIP look like with the extra home run production?
It's yeah,
still... according to his career,
well,
if
that's
he
hit the thing.
320, he's going to need a BABIP around 340.
But this is the thing. Like, sometimes
he's
career numbers
with the home runs.
Hold on, guys. Sometimes career numbers don't really matter. If a guy like Jose Bautista made a big change in his swing when he went to Toronto, and he
right.
became a different player. And that's what happened with Daniel Murphy, and we are buying into that.
Yeah, this wasn't just some random good season. This was a conscious change that he's talked about. It's J.D. Martinez is a good example. These are guys who have made – maybe the league will adjust to them. Maybe Daniel Murphy will start getting more high fastballs that he can't drive into the air. He'll lead to more pop-ups, and that'll be the issue. But in a league where pitcher is taught to throw down in the zone, opposing hitters have adjusted to lift those balls into the air. And Daniel Murphy's one of the ones who has made the biggest change.
So follow-up question to this on Daniel Murphy is, why is it that if Daniel Murphy is the best hitter available in the second round, I feel like we're not ready to take him over like Madison Bumgarner. You know, if it's between a pitcher and it's almost like Daniel Murphy represents the beginning of the next tier of players who aren't worthy of being picked ahead of the safe pitching option.
Well, the one thing I didn't want to downplay from what Adam in St. Pete was saying was that there is injury risk with Daniel Murphy. He does have a history of a lot of nagging injuries. He's 31 years old. So that's the risk I see with him, less so than performance, and it's one worth entertaining at that stage of the draft.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So
good email, Adam.
Yeah, it was a good email. For me or for him?
No, like, not you.
Good job by me picking it, or a good email from Adam?
Just him.
Way to go, Adam.
Only him.
Works for me. Listen, I want to talk about the March Madness contest. Getting a lot of emails about it. Been sending you the link. You can also find it on Twitter. We want you to join our March Madness pool. Here's the deal. I got confused. Whoever is winning after the Elite Eight gets in the podcast league, and that's only like a day or two before we're drafting. Here's your big podcast league announcement. You want in the podcast league? It's on Tuesday, March 29th at 8 p.m. No, Wednesday. Wednesday.
Yeah. Wednesday, March 29th, Adam.
Wednesday, March 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Email us fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Put podcast league in the subject line. Wednesday, March 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Put podcast league in the subject line. The email is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We'll do a rejects league as well. So wait, we haven't talked about this. Should we make them like write a haiku or something funny or what?
A limerick.
A limerick?
It's just a talent competition via email, right? Basically, just do whatever you're best at, and if we like it. If Heath likes it specifically. He's putting this together, I assume.
No, I'm going to do the primary.
Oh, you're
going to
do it?
He's doing the regular. I'm doing the rejects.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's asking how to get into the regular, not how to get into the rejects.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I got confused. I'm sorry. Don't listen to me.
I already gave
a limerick.
All right, a limerick. Which is like there once was a boy from.
They're always inappropriate, which is awesome. But, yeah. Something I was shocked by that I think we shouldn't maybe gloss over is how many people listen to this podcast and are not on Twitter.
How many smart people listen to this podcast?
Like, we're getting so many emails. Please send me the link. I'm not on Twitter. I just kind of thought everybody was on Twitter. You guys should get on Twitter. You should follow us on
you
Twitter.
You should really just stay off Twitter.
At Heath Cummings Sr.
Everything that happens in the world happens
SR.
First on Twitter.
Well, that's true, yeah.
All right,
Facebook
so
gets it like 2 weeks later.
We've been having some fun on the podcast today. Let's get down to business. Let's talk baseball. The injuries news and notes are somewhat of a repeat from yesterday. It just updated, like Ian Desmond underwent hand surgery. There's still no timetable. So we'll come back to that. Let's do what we came here to do. Position summaries. Catcher. All right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw out a position. You guys tell me your approach. I want a top 8 guy, whatever. I'm going to wait, whatever it is. And then I want you to tell me an ADP you like or a guy you've been drafting a lot, something like that. Let's start with catcher. Let's start with Scott White. Catcher, go ahead.
So there's a clear top 3 that stands out from the rest, Posey, Lucroy, and Sanchez. I want to try to get one of those 3. Round four, I'd go for Posey. Round six for the other two at the earliest. If it doesn't happen, then in a one-catcher league, I'm probably waiting till the very end, taking Russell Martin or J.D. Realmuto or Brian McCann or somebody like that.
Okay, that's
two-catcher
league.
Right? I might go beyond just those top three and in the middle rounds. Well, probably reach for one of that same tier I mentioned at the end for a one-catcher league, because you don't want to end up with like two Sandy Leone types in a two-catcher league. But I don't mind if the second catcher's of that level. Obviously, my favorite sleepers are Tom Murphy with the big power in Colorado and Austin Hedges, who had a huge season at AAA last year and is having a good spring.
Jonathan LaCroix is pretty much the only one of the elite three that I have drafted so far, because I feel like he's being drafted in the Gary Sanchez range, but is probably not any difference between him and Buster Posey. So I just wait till somebody else takes Buster Posey, and then I'll take Jonathan LaCroix. But I haven't gotten them as often as I've gotten Evan Gattis and Wellington Castillo. I feel like maybe people, because I was kind of down on Gattis before the McCann signing, and now I feel like people maybe are overestimating how often he's going to sit.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got Gattis on more teams than any others. In a two-catcher league, I would like to have one good catcher, and then I usually take Cameron Rupp as my second.
Okay. Chris, catcher thoughts.
In a one-catcher league, I don't think I've taken a catcher in the first probably 10 rounds. I'm usually looking to grab Yasmani Grandal in the 10 to 12 round range if he's available. If not in a 12 catcher league, I'm fine waiting. I think there are enough catchers that I don't mind ending up with a Matt Wieters or a Wellington Castillo in a two catcher league. It's mostly the same thing, but I want two guys that I feel somewhat confident in, rather than I'm almost never going to pay for the elite catchers. I just think there's too much uncertainty surrounding them this year.
Yeah, I feel like in the two catcher league, I'm with you, Chris. You cannot be stuck in a two catcher league, as Scott said, with like two guys who are, you know, in the 20s. You can't have two Sandy Leone types. I want
two guys in like the 10 to 15 right now in a two catcher league.
Yeah, I kind of want two good catchers, you know, Russell Martin and Matt Wieters or, you know, something like that, and something respectable.
Can I just mention one last thing? I know we have other positions to get to, but like the reason why I'm more motivated to go after the elite group at catcher is because I feel like it's the one position this year where you can really take advantage of position scarcity. The infield positions have all gotten to be so deep that that's not really
an
advantage you can have anymore.
And that's my thing, is that just I don't know if I buy that the elite catchers are that far ahead of the rest of the pack this year, just because we saw Posey start to decline last year. LaCroix, we've seen a bad season from him in the last two. And Sanchez, like the pedigree, I like the talent. He's not nearly as good as he looked last year. If he's more of a 20-homer guy who hits 270, I'm just not sure he's better than Yasmani Grandal.
Yeah, but the Grandal, like we say it every year, because I kind of target Grandal too, but the guy is so injury-prone. Definitely has playing time issues and just hasn't put it together. And he hits 220 every year, which doesn't make any sense. He should hit better than that, and I think he will. But I'd like to see it first. Like, it's Grandal is speculation.
I think there's a decent amount of speculation with the top three as well.
Interesting. Okay, so that's catcher for you. Let's go to first base, where the depth of first base. First of all, it took a hit with Ian Desmond's injury, even though he's not first base eligible yet. We expected that to be the case by week two. But the depth of first base also really depends on where you end up playing Daniel Murphy and Matt Carpenter. If you have them as your first baseman, and to be honest with you, I've been doing that in mocks, drafting them to be something else and then moving them to first base because it just seemed to make sense. Well, then it's a deeper position. Then there might be 12 good ones that you like, and we talk about 12-team leagues a lot. If Murphy and Carpenter are second baseman for you, Carpenter maybe a third base, whatever, then things are a little bit different. So, Heath, why don't you kick it off? Give me your first base approach.
I'm like this probably more than everybody else at most of the positions, but especially at first base, I've drafted Joey Votto, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Davis, Edwin Encarnacion, Carlos Santana, everybody once. Like, I don't have a guy that I've specifically targeted. If I can get Joey Votto in the second round, I feel great about that. If I can get Anthony Rizzo late in the first, I feel great about that. But I don't mind waiting because I think Carlos Santana is a huge value. I think in Roto, Chris Davis is still a really good value. Will Myers and Roto, I don't feel like this position is one that I have to grab in the first two rounds like I've felt in the past two seasons.
I feel the opposite.
The exact opposite.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a big enough gap between the first tier and the second tier, and the first tier is large enough that you don't really have to extend yourself to dip into it. That first tier consisting of Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto, Edwin Encarnacion, and you might even lump Daniel Murphy in there, because I agree with you, Adam. I tend to start Murphy and Carpenter more often than not at first base.
See, and this is where I think the email we got about Daniel Murphy comes into play, is we're now putting Daniel Murphy in the Paul Goldschmidt tier.
I mean, I'd rather have Goldschmidt, but if you make the tiers too small, then it kind of defeats the purpose, right? Not every tier can be one player deep.
Right, but if there's in my opinion, and maybe I'm just wrong, there's a bigger difference between Goldschmidt and Murphy than there is between Murphy and Myers or Murphy and Davis.
Ooh, I don't know. Yeah, not based on last year. Because Murphy
right,
was
not based on last year.
I mean, Murphy's somebody I'm drafting at the end of round two, and Myers I'm drafting in round five at the earliest, and that's probably just in a roto league. So. I don't know. I actually think the downside is more palpable for Myers because his plate discipline's so bad.
And there's less explanation for what went right. Like, Will Myers might be a guy that just had a really good half season.
He Daniel did Murphy, not say that he tried to change his swing plane.
Well, I mean, like, we have an explanation for it. Like, if right.
Yeah, there's actually, like, it wasn't just one off article on Murphy that were
like he talked about this at the time in August
of
2015.
Months and months and months of different writers writing about what changed for Murphy. I actually,
like, I wrote it off after the big postseason.
Yeah, well, we all did.
I'm not writing Daniel Murphy off. I want to be clear. I'm not adding into my bust column or anything. I think it was a good email that raised some good points.
I have an article on Daniel Murphy that kind of takes the best of all those articles that were written and kind of mashes them together into one explanation. So
sports
go
mashup.
Check that out.
All right, so let's advance this conversation here. Scott thinks it's more important, not to say that every time Scott's going to get one of the top, what is it, six first basemen?
Yes. It's kind of dependent on draft order. Those first two rounds are very choreographed and for good reason. But I'd like to get, if it works out, then that's my ideal solution. And if not, I just take the best value I could find. Sometimes it's Myers, particularly in an auction setting. Sometimes it's Jose Abreu. Sometimes it's Chris Davis. I'd rather not have to settle for Hanley Ramirez, but then if we move on to Chris, I know he really likes Hanley
Love
Ramirez.
Love settling for Hanley Ramirez.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what's your strategy?
I think he's a nice value in the seventh round where he's currently going.
But do you sit there when you start your draft and say, I'm just going to wait for Hanley Ramirez, or do you have a different approach and then Hanley's a good fallback for you?
You know, the funny thing is I haven't drafted Hanley all that often just because first base is one where I'm fine through. I think Hanley, Chris Davis is kind of the end of where maybe Carlos Santana, but there are probably more first basemen I feel good about than there are teams in your standard 12-team league. So it's not necessarily a priority. I'm very much like Heath. I've drafted all over the place with first base. There's a lot of good players there.
Can we mark the tape? I'm very much like Heath.
You're the one who disagrees with everyone.
Wait a second.
Scott and I are over here agreeable as anyone.
Yeah, but okay. So let me just... You say that there are more than 12 first basemen that you're cool with.
Yes.
How many are there? Because, again, that really depends on Daniel Murphy and Matt Carpenter. If you're not playing them at first, I don't think that's the case. Because then I think you're talking about number 12 would be Eric Hosmer. And we don't want Eric Hosmer to be our starting first baseman.
He would not be number 12 for me.
Oh, sorry, looking at Heath's rankings. It would be Pujols
would
for
be
you.
Albert Pujols.
If I took Matt Carpenter out and Daniel Murphy out, my number 12 would probably be, okay, without those guys, there might only be 11 guys. Because then I get to Brandon Belt, who I like more than most people. I think he has breakout potential. But Certainly not someone you feel great about as your number one.
All right, I'm going to sum it up and say, as long as you're willing to put Carpenter and Murphy at first base, which you should be, there are probably 11 or 12 first basemen that we at the moment consider starting caliber. You're not going to be at a huge disadvantage. That's down to guys like Will Myers, Chris Davis, Jose Abreu, Hanley Ramirez, Carlos Santana. So you don't have to go early at first base. Some of us are more likely to, and there might be a big difference between that first tier and the rest. It does appear to be a bit of a top-heavy position, but it is not exactly shallow.
The other thing I will say is there are some excellent first basemen lower in the rankings for your corner infield position in a roto league.
Yeah, but the third baseman, and I'll skip second and short, and let's just stay on corner infield here, and let's go to third base, because I feel like third basemen are even better for corner infield. And it just, one of the points I wanted to make is if you're playing in a league with a corner infielder, don't reach at corner infield. Between the Greg Birds and Josh Bells and at first base and Travis Shaw and Michael Franco and guys like that, who am I forgetting? And Miguel Sano at third base, like there are going to be, I think, plenty of good corner infield options, guys, and I don't think that's a spot that you should be reaching for. Like, don't fill it up.
There's more high-end corner infield position, like the Franco. I've got Todd Frazier as a corner infielder. Some people would call him a third baseman. But I like the low-end first base options better.
All right, but if you're doing a roto draft, which we will be doing today, but it's NL only or AL only or something. If you're doing a mixed league roto draft, like you shouldn't fill your corner. I don't think you should want to fill your corner infield spot early because I think you're going to be kicking yourselves at the draft values late.
Chris and I just figured out that today's draft was a league specific draft.
I didn't realize we had a draft today.
All right, so what's your third base strategy? Is now I went off on the corner infield tangent. Scott, Chris, you can kick it off. What's your third base strategy?
Well, a third of the league is going to get a third baseman in the first round. If you're one of the four teams in your 12-team league, you're set there. Nolan Arenado, Chris Bryant, Josh Donaldson, or Manny Machado.
No, let's put Machado at short.
And potentially Bryant at outfield. Potentially.
Maybe, but you're going to have a third base eligible in the
sure.
Yep. player. A third of your league is going to have an elite third base eligible player in the first round. I love getting any of those guys. There's almost nothing to dislike about any of them. Other than that, third base is really deep. I find myself, you know, if I wait until the eighth round to draft my first baseman and get, I don't know, Justin Turner, who's actually going in the 10th round right now, I feel okay about that. There's just a lot of depth at third base.
Yeah, sometimes in round 8 or 9, I get Todd Frazier or Longoria or
Anthony
Turner,
Rendon,
like you say.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. I mean,
there's a lot of really
good
third basemen.
Those first round third basemen are so good that I'm not passing them up just because they're third basemen. But like, I'm not reaching for any other third baseman. If somebody in that like Kyle Seager, Bregman, Beltre range drops long enough that I just can't pass them over anymore, I'll go ahead and take them, understanding that, you know, even in a head-to-head lineup, you can start two third basemen, you could stick another at utility, and that's often the way I've gone. But it's just all about value after that top four.
Third base is so, so deep. The third baseman I actually have the most of so far this year is Travis Shaw, which should be no surprise.
As a starting third baseman or as a corner infielder?
As a corner infielder.
Oh, okay.
So you either don't draft Travis Shaw at all or you draft him with your last pick?
Draft him with the last pick in a roto league. I love Yonhervis Solarte late in a points league. Franco, Sano.
There's upside guys in the 20s too.
Yep.
Ryan Healy, Yuli Gurriel, Javier Baez. Gong.
Like, take one of the, and I don't take this the wrong way, take one of those elite third basemen if you get a chance in the first round, but if you don't, there is no rush.
And you could easily make your utility or your DH a third baseman. And
yeah, I drafted one team with nine third basemen.
Really?
Nine?
Yeah, it was kind of an experiment to see how many he could get on the roster. I don't think there's a lot of practical application for it, but there were.
It was fun.
Like, you fit four in your lineup, right? Because they were multi-eligible.
I think I had five in my lineup and three on my bench, or four
on
my bench.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you could fit them in your lineup, great. I don't know that loading your bench with third baseman makes...
They can all play different places, too, though.
Could they?
It was Baez was one of them, who can play three of the infield positions.
Yeah. Jose Reyes could gain. I think he was on the team. I think.
Yep, Jose Reyes is on the
team. He could gain shortstop and maybe outfield.
Hernan Perez.
I would say, yeah, these guys all have good appeal. But you know, I just want to talk about players that we want to draft. you know, a lot. And I really want Michael Franco and Miguel Sano. I don't want them to be starters for me at third base, but if they're corner infield starters, that's fine. If they're bench starters, if they're utility starters, I'm very excited about Franco. I know you guys are excited about both of them, I think. And yep. they have huge potential. So those are two third basemen that I really want some shares of.
Oh, yeah. If Miguel Sano leads the majors in home runs this year, no one should be surprised.
Yeah.
Okay. I happen into Jose Ramirez a lot.
Yeah.
I have not drafted him yet.
Oh, I love it. He's like a late, you know, you need some steals and some batting average, and you're lacking there. You got to get yourself some Jose Ramirez.
Right. Like, those are two hard categories to fill at the stage of the draft where he's available. And in points leagues, he hardly ever strikes out. So that may even be his better format. And if it turns out you get value at third base later, you can move him to the outfield. So handy player in the round 10, 11 range.
Good call. All right, let's go to second base. Focus on the middle infield now. And the depth at second base has taken a hit because Kipnis is going to start the year on the DL. And Devin Travis is banged up too. He might start the year on the DL. So
I think he is expected to play in an inter-squad game today.
Okay. Make a little progress. I like it. What do you guys think about second base and how you're approaching it? I'll say this about second base. I've touted the depth of the position, but I also keep missing out on Dozier and Cano every single time. And Trey Turner, who we're also going to kind of treat like a shortstop because he'll be shortstop eligible by the second week of the season. And I don't know. Like I'm one of the last people to take a second baseman every time, and I feel like that's a good position to do that with. But maybe I'm taking it a little bit too far. So what's your?
I'll just say that we're getting late enough in draft season that Trey Turner is going to be a first round pick.
Like, oh, he is right now.
He's going on my bust list when I update it. Spoiler alert, because I don't think there's any way we should be taking Trey Turner in the first round. And I'm okay with missing out on Dozier and Cano when they're going in the third round.
Well,
I feel like Dozier's gone later. I feel like I've taken Dozier at a point where it just felt like he had fallen too far.
Which is what?
I feel like I've gotten him in the fourth round before.
Of a 12-team league.
But what I would say is, like, looking at ADP, second basemen are just going much earlier than I'm comfortable with.
Except I get that he's hurt, but Matt Carpenter's currently the 11th second baseman off the board at 70th overall. I think that's a steal. I know Heath doesn't.
I did.
Well, do they really? Because, I mean, Zobrist, Pedroia...
Those guys do not. No.
They tend to
go like the top 10 do.
Late. I don't know. Like, first of all, I disagree with the idea Trey Turner can't be a first rounder. I think there's 11 first rounders if that 12th guy is Corey Seager Charlie Blackmon or Trey Turner. Like, I think they're all justifiable.
We did this last year with Carlos Correa. And Carlos Correa wasn't bad. But he clearly wasn't a first rounder, and we moved him into the first round based on one half good season.
Well, Trey Turner was even better than Carlos
Correa. In less playing time.
Yeah, but even better. A higher ceiling he showed.
I think he's, like you said, there's that 12th guy, especially with Scherzer hurt, is a little more open.
But beyond that, like, Cano, Dozier... Like, when I initially put my rankings together, they both profiled as late second rounders to me. Turns out, you don't really have to draft them at that point. I think, in part, because people recognize there's those value picks, Zobrist and Pedroia, and sometimes, like, DJ LeMahieu, they'll slide farther than they should. Kinsler. But, like, that's what their production, I feel like, says they should be. So I'm fine taking them in, like, the third round, even, especially Cano. I have more concerns about Dozier, but I understand Cano, you know, the first couple years in Seattle, that doesn't sit well with some people, and his age doesn't sit well with some people. Like, I understand it. Yeah. So, like, I feel like, even though second base has these great value picks late, and you can wait there, you also don't have to wait there if you just like the value of one of those guys so much. I mean... I talked about playing a third baseman at utility. I'm comfortable playing a second baseman at utility if it's somebody as good as like a Zobrist or Pedroia. And certainly Zobrist you could stick him in the outfield instead. Like, they don't have to be your second baseman. It's not like you've blocked them from being on your roster if you take a second baseman early. I just don't know that like it's really beneficial to pass up good value, knowing that you're probably going to be strong all around the infield, like regardless of where you target your player.
Zobrist was the number 9 second baseman in points, number 12 in Roto, but like Zobrist and Pedroia are a little dangerous. Like if you compare them to Franco and Sano, yeah, there's certainly a scenario where Zobrist and Pedroia are better, you know, as they were last year. But yeah. I mean, there's so much less upside, which is why I don't really want them to be my utility or my DH.
Well, and I feel much better about making them a utility in a points league.
Agreed.
Than I would in a roto league.
Yeah, especially Zobrist. I mean, Zobrist doesn't homer and doesn't steal, so.
He made a funny face when I tried to sum up that.
I don't know what you said.
My point was like all the infield spots are so deep that you almost have to try to like have a bad player at one of them.
Well, that's why I'm not trying to have a bad player, but I think that's why when we do our drafts, you draft 4 infield spots in the first 7 rounds, and I've got my outfield full.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather go get the elite outfielders.
I'd just rather have more infielders on my roster as a whole. Like there's rarely been a point in a draft where it was like, oh, this guy's such a great value, but I already have the infield spot filled.
Both outfield and infield. Two things I do want to point out. Jose Peraza's ADP is 13th round. He goes for like $18 in every auction draft we do, I think.
It's climbing, I think,
yeah,
the ADP
So that's going to go a lot higher in Roto, to the point where it might be a little hard to justify drafting him if he gets into like the 10th round range. And Jonathan Scope, number 18 second baseman, 174 overall. I think he's a really nice value.
He better play 162 games again.
He's 95% of what Rougned Odor was last year.
No.
He stole 11 fewer bases.
That's a big deal.
Sure.
He also hit 8 fewer home runs, didn't he?
That's far from 95%.
Well, he hit 25 home runs.
The RBI runs were very close. 25 home runs is still a solid number. Like, is 8 home runs over the course of the season? Like,
yes.
I think he's a really nice value.
He's like 60.
Well, that's fine. Like, Scope a good value, okay. The Scope 90% of Odor, I don't know. It might be stretching a little bit.
Odor.
But he's got to play. Like, he needed every one of those plate appearances.
Yeah. Okay. So, are we done with second base here? Okay.
Yep.
Good. So, I got to tell you about SeatGeek. Everyone, take out your phone right now. Do it. Now, go to your app store, type in SeatGeek, download the SeatGeek app. Now take your wallet out and put $20 in there. SeatGeek's going to basically do that for you.
How do I put $20 on my phone?
No. You put in your wallet from your phone. I don't know, Heath. SeatGeek's going to do it for you. That's the point. You get on SeatGeek, you buy tickets, and use our promo code FANTASY. And you get a $20 rebate with our promo code, and that's on your first purchase. So that's great. Promo code is FANTASY. SeatGeek does a lot for you, searches multiple ticket sites, finds you the best deals, gives you the best prices on tickets. So why look around? I mean, think about this. Why look around the internet at 5 different places trying to find tickets to games or concerts or comedy or theater? Let SeatGeek do all the work for you. That's what I do. I use SeatGeek all the time. And to get that $20 rebate, to get $20 back in your wallet, download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code FANTASY. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app, and the promo code is FANTASY, all caps on FANTASY. Let's go to shortstop here. Shortstop, Heath, you can start. Strategy.
Shortstop. Strategy. I have drafted Addison Russell and Elvis Andrews a lot late. So I just go with like all the late infielders. If Manny Machado's there in the first 9 or 10 picks, I feel fantastic about landing him. I think, again, this is another deep infield position and another reason probably why I'm leaning towards outfield a lot late. I think the Trey Turner thing is something that needs to be brought up more.
You mean you're leaning outfield early because infield's
yes.
so deep? Okay.
Right.
Yeah,
but I think the Trey Turner thing is something that was good that you brought up. I've dropped Corey Seager just a little bit in my rankings, even though they say he's going to be ready. I did take him at the 1-2 turn a little bit early in the season. I probably wouldn't do that now. The mid-range is really interesting. With Story, Aledmys Diaz, VR, Segura.
Yep.
Well, the thing is...
like, everybody else is taking VR way ahead of those guys.
But... well, and Aledmys Diaz is going 100 spots behind VR and Trevor Story. I feel like Aledmys Diaz is still...
yeah.
I would much rather have Aledmys Diaz.
Like, that's the tier I'm most often drafting from. The way I break shortstop down, Machado, obviously, at the top. If I get him in the first round, great. I'm usually skipping that next tier, Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts, Francisco Lindor, knowing that Gene Segura, Jonathan VR, Trevor Story, and Aledmys Diaz are right behind them. Those eight players performed at a similar level last year. In fact, some of that second group before actually outperformed the first. It's just the Segura, VR, Story, Diaz tier. We weren't expecting it from any of them. So they don't feel as safe, and maybe they're not
safe,
but there's such going to be better value. Like, yeah. Corey Seager in round two versus Gene Segura in round six or seven, Aledmys Diaz in round seven or
but
eight.
Those
are the two specifically that I'm drafting most often.
Segura and
Aledmys Diaz.
Yeah. I feel the Aledmys Diaz love.
I mean, Segura, I think, you know, he's someone that I'm not the biggest fan of, and I don't quite buy it with the change in park, the fact that he only did it for 1 year, but you know, in the 5-6 turn where he's currently going, that seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, especially if you need steals. And yeah. Here's the problem I keep having. Like, I really want to get Xander Bogaerts, and I wouldn't mind getting Francisco Lindor. These are two very young players who have gotten better, and I think Bogaerts has huge power potential. I think he stole 13 bases last year, and he says he wants to steal more than 20, and I believe that he can steal more than 20. Not much more, but let's just say 20. I want Bogaerts on my team. I think if he's there in the fourth round, I might have to pull the trigger. The problem I keep running into is like when I have to take Bogaerts, I might be drafting my ace. And you know, if it's the third round, that's why I don't get Cano or Dozier, because I'm so often drafting my first starting pitcher in the third round, and it's usually like a John Lester type that I have to pass up on those talented infielders. And it's just so hard. I mean, we sit here and we say, I want one of this, I want this, I want that. Like, it's just, you know, you're going to have to make sacrifices on draft day, and I feel like I keep sacrificing at the infield and taking like my elite outfielders and my elite starting pitcher in the first few rounds of the draft. Not every time, but I don't know. I kind of what Heath was saying.
It seems like
Scott takes the complete opposite approach.
And that's, you know, to be a broken record, that's why I like waiting on starting pitcher. I'm not going to get the guys that we consider elite at starting pitcher, but they're so they're just so prone to injury and underperformance that I'd much rather draft one of the elite hitters.
I will say, in a roto league, you can get steals late in your middle infield through shortstop. Everybody's maybe going to get to the point where they're overdrafting Jose Peraza, but Elvis Andrus is still out there, and he'll help you in batting average as well.
Tim Anderson
could have a big year.
Power is also really easy to find at shortstop, which is weird.
Yeah.
At least based on last year.
Right. Yeah. The Brad Miller, Marcus Semien, Jed Jerko.
Didi Gregorius hit 20 home runs.
I don't know if I, like, do you feel as good about those guys hitting home runs as you do about the first group stealing bases?
Yes and no. I don't know, like, we're talking about a bunch of guys who've only done it for 1 year, except for Andrus, who has had some 20 steal seasons, too.
Right.
All right, hey, let me try to speed this up here. So, relief pitcher, I'm going to skip around a relief pitcher. Relief pitcher, there are like 14 elite guys. I really feel like, and agree or disagree, you should have at least one on your roster, no matter what the format.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
In a points league, it's helpful to have, if you've never played it or don't, it's helpful to have a SPARP, a starting pitcher who can be relief pitch
eligible.
What?
Bundy.
Yeah, Dylan Bundy's a good one.
Danny Duffy.
Danny Duffy obviously is the best one. It's really helpful to have those guys. Andrew Triggs, Luis Severino.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, if they have jobs, we'll keep an eye on it.
Patrick Corbin.
So take shots on that. Starting pitcher and outfield, and Scott, you know, let's talk about this as it relates to infield and kind of what I was just talking about, where I have trouble getting some of these elite infielders because I'm always taking the high-low approach at outfield, which is I want like a couple guys early, maybe two in the first five rounds or something like that. Maybe like a Nelson Cruz and a Gregory Polanco for me, or hopefully I get Trout or Betts or Blackman or something and whatever. But also starting pitcher in that same kind of group. Like the first five rounds of your draft, how many starting pitchers plus outfielders do you want to have typically?
The first five rounds of my draft, I think ideal would be four, two of each. I think more often than not, I end up with three. And sometimes just two. It really, like, so much is dependent on just who you go with in round one and who you go with in round two, which is kind of dependent on what everybody around you does. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of changes things from there. Like, I mentioned that I don't think there's anything wrong with going Trey Turner 12 in the first round. Charlie Blackman's my choice there right now. He's an outfielder. I prioritize Mookie Betts over Jose Altuve at pick number two because he's an outfielder. I do give a little bit of extra emphasis to outfield. But, like, if it doesn't work out, okay, whatever. Nelson Cruz in round four will be my first outfielder. That's fine. Like, I'm okay with that. I would like to get preferably two, but at least one of the top 20, 25 outfielders, and then just wait until late in the draft to fill in my other spots. And that's applies for a five outfielder league or a three outfielder league. I feel like the best values in the late rounds are going to be outfielders.
Yeah.
And pitchers.
Yeah. What I don't want to do is fill out my outfield in like round six through 9, 6 through 10, because that's where you're like, those are like Justin Upton, Stephen Piscotty, Dexter Fowler types, ones that are just like, okay, they're fine, but their upside has a clear limit. And I think the upside of the late round guys is arguably just as high. Mm-hmm.
The one exception there is Jose Bautista, who's going 88th, and that's climbing, but still not nearly fast enough.
Yeah, he's looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, I mean, he was 99 when I wrote my ADP review last week. He's 88 now. I don't see any reason he shouldn't be a fifth or sixth round pick.
Okay, Jose Bautista. You guys have anything you want to say about outfield and starting pitcher? I think Scott and I are taking a similar approach to both, which is get some studs early and fill it out later.
I fill my outfield really fast, quite often.
It's really easy to get FOMO that way, though.
In both three and yeah. five outfielder leagues, I don't feel any FOMO.
No, there's always, like, I've had a couple drafts where I filled out my outfield within the first 10 rounds and then, like, seen, Andrew Benintendi still sitting there and been like, I should have waited.
Yasiel Puig.
Yasiel Puig going.
See, I don't.
209th right now.
I have a
Broxton 210.
Time FOMOing Yasiel Puig.
I want some exposure to Yasiel Puig.
You can get him so late. Like, this is a guy we were drafting in the second round, 2 years ago? And he's still in the prime of his career?
There's you get into the 200 to 250 range at outfield, and there are so many guys, even beyond that, so many guys that you look at and just say, like, I want that guy on my team. Jorge Soler, even with the crummy spring he's having. Manuel Margot with the opportunity for stolen bases. Max Kepler as a breakout candidate. Kevin Kiermaier, I know Scott really likes.
Yeah.
These are all guys that are going to go undrafted in half of your head-to-head 12-team league.
Oh, yeah.
Mitch Haniger. I mean, this guy I've probably talked about the most.
377 right now.
I'm rarely able to draft him in a standard mixed league just because we don't get deep enough into the player pool.
377, that's how many times Scott has mentioned Mitch Haniger, or that's his ADP?
Yes. But, you know, someone like Michael Conforto who has breakout potential, these are guys that in a lot of leagues are just not going to be drafted.
Now, speaking of breakout potential, where I do get FOMO is at starting pitcher.
Right.
I really want to take one of the sure aces, unlike Chris. But then, like Chris, I want to load up in the teens on guys like Lance McCullers, guys like Carlos Rodon, guys like Taijuan Walker. And I have had situations where I took two starting pitchers early, maybe even three in the first 12 rounds, and then I don't have room for all of these guys that I think might turn into aces.
Yeah, I'm writing a series about that on guys
Here
that I'm targeting who've got the potential to be aces. And like, Carlos Martinez is the only one that I think is going to be a top 100 pick that I'm going to write about, just because, you know, these guys, they're high variance pitchers, but they could be really good. There's a lot of those guys, like Heath mentioned.
Blake Snell.
Kevin Gausman, I think, actually is a pretty decent value at 138.
There's probably like 50 pitchers after the 15 or so aces who could be like ace level. It's like,
yeah, there you can
it's
go
a crazy.
I think you can go 50 spots deep and find guys with ace potential, but there's a lot of guys in there that are like Jake Odorizzi, Jeff Samardzija, Jay Happ, who are being drafted in that range, but don't have. There's no world in which Jay Happ's an ace.
Like
he was
like
last year,
last season.
He was. I mean, he was the number
11
starting
pitcher. Yeah, I said the same thing.
Not Odorizzi though. There is no world in which Odorizzi's an ace.
It's the post the 260 BABIP world where the Rays are as good as the computer systems think they are.
All right, so I want three top 25 to top 30 pitchers. I do want that, and then I will take a break from starting pitcher for a little bit. I know obviously Chris does not feel that way. Scott, Heath, I feel like you sort of feel that way.
No. Well, I guess I'll change that.
Your top 35 is very different.
I want
you have
three top 30, but I can take two of those three in the 13th and 14th rounds.
Adam and have a very similar approach here.
And I'm not going to say like I am taking Scott's approach. This is not my approach. I'm sort of piggybacking off of what Scott is going to do at pitcher. I just want some stability, and I do see more of a difference between like – I understand you can make cases for everything, but I'd much rather have Garrett Cole than Kevin Gausman. I think they're completely different.
I wrote about Kevin Gausman yesterday. We haven't really talked about him at all this year, I feel like, but he needs to go to the Matt Shoemaker school of pitching because his splitter is one of the best pitches in baseball, and he started throwing it around 25% of the time during his second half breakout last year.
How long do we think that approach can work? Like, clearly, for a half a season, it can work.
I mean,
it's a pretty good pitch.
What approach?
Throwing your splitter 70% of the time.
Nobody's ever thrown their splitter 70%. No, Matt Shoemaker was 40%.
Yeah, it was 40.
Okay,
yeah,
so throwing
it
that
up
often
to him. Like, I keep
it kind of
up to him. He averaged 6.6 or whatever it was strikeouts per nine over the last 2 months. Like, hitters just stopped falling for it.
His results were still very good.
Like a mid-3 ZRA?
But Gausman has an even better splitter, is the thing, and he throws 96 miles an hour.
I think the key to deceiving hitters is
mustaches.
Multiple pitches. You can't just rely on one pitch.
Well, throwing it 40% of the time is not relying on one pitch.
He has Gausman basically has two pitches.
Most starting, like,
and not
Carlos Martinez throws his fastball 70% of the time. Nobody thinks he needs to mix it up.
Who? Like,
Carlos Martinez, but any starter, most starters throw their fastball 60%+ of the time.
Yeah, but they have more than one secondary pitch.
And they have more than one fastball. I mean,
three secondary pitches.
No, he pretty much just has two pitches. He's just fastball splitter.
He threw his curveball about as often as he threw his splitter last year.
So, let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
We got some really good stuff to talk about tomorrow. And a lot of your emails, the news and notes. The only news and note item that I thought was interesting and new, I'll just sift through the notes here, was White Sox center fielder Charlie Tilson going to start the year on the DL. And that's someone we haven't really talked about, but he stole 46 bases in 65 attempts at AA in 2015. Charlie Tilson, that's the only minor league season in which he stole more than 15 bases. But yeah, a name that we haven't really mentioned. He was supposed to be the starting center fielder for the White Sox. Tell me about Charlie Tilson and if there's any value in drafting him and stashing Tilson on the DL.
Have to be a pretty deep roto league, but yeah, I mean, cheap steals seems like that's certainly a possibility. There's a chance he comes back from this and center field's already claimed and he never gets that shot again, but that's why I'm saying it has to be a pretty deep league.
Good thing about bad teams, though, is they're going to give guys like him a shot.
Yeah, and also Keon Broxton homered yesterday, and that's FOMO. If you don't have a roster spot for Keon Broxton late, through Team Name Tuesday, Because it is Tuesday, after all. I know, I'm being weird right now. Team Name Tuesday? Where are you, Team Name Tuesday?
You getting the cabin fever, Adam?
Yeah, I think so. Paul in Snowed Wichita. In. Paul in Wichita has Lord Voldemort and Call Me Maybe.
Call Me Maybe is an oldie but a goodie. Lord Voldemort.
Voldemort.
That sounds more like a convenience store.
Did you? No, you
I
made it.
I would shop at the Voldemort.
You made it Mart. He said Mort.
Mort.
You know what they don't have at the Voldemort?
What?
Pop flies.
Do you know what Lord Voldemort is a reference to?
Voldemort.
Okay. Just
is that from Harry Potter?
Sure. You sounded a little confused.
Is that from Harry Potter?
His name.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the one you're not allowed to say?
He must not be named. Gosh,
Voldemort.
Please.
Okay. Well,
they say he who should not must not be named, but then they say his name all the
freaking
time.
And then it turns out that he's got a spell and... God, you always don't know anything.
And the other Team Name Tuesday submission is from Joe in Madison, Alabama, and he wants me to sing, which I'm always happy to do. I'll be singing some 90s rock, some Creed. Can you take Mania?
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, I think we can end this show tomorrow. These are some of the things I wanted to talk about today that we'll talk about tomorrow. What do you think about Elvis Andrews being the number 9 shortstop in fantasy last year? What do you think about Julio Urias' innings limit and that, how that should affect how we draft him? What do you think about Adam Duvall's first and second half splits? Duvall was the 24th best outfielder in points league, 17th in Roto. What do you think about Michael Fulmer being a top 15 starting pitcher this season? And what do you think about Ben Revere becoming fantasy relevant again with the Angels? It would take some work, but I don't think it's out of the question. We also have an email about Shin-Soo Chu, about Adam Jones, about Tyler Saladino, the great Saladino, and some auction strategy stuff too. So tomorrow I want to dig into players that we haven't talked enough about. Also, sleepers, breakouts, busts. We'll talk about that this week and on into next week. And hooray for fantasy baseball. Hooray for Blizzards. For Heath Cummings, Scott White, and Chris Towers, I'm Adam Azer. Talk to you tomorrow.